Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. I want to thank you for listening to this podcast from Connecting Faith. There are many more podcasts available at our website, myfaithradio.com. And your support makes this possible.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Hi, welcome to Connecting Faith. Thanks so much for tuning in. I always appreciate the opportunity to get together with you. I'm Neil Stavem, Ted Ross at the controls. And Ted, today, not only the beginning of a new month, it's also a day of global awareness, or at least it has been for the past 25 years. It's a World AIDS Day today.
Yes, very important. You know, this is a time where we're thinking about family, of course, and getting ready for Christmas and everything. But it's important to stop and remember that there are people suffering in the world, too.
Yeah, and it's a disease that has taken some, I think, 35 million lives over the past 20, 30 years or so. We're going to learn more about that in the moments ahead. So I invite you to stay tuned to Connecting Faith. Coming up in the second half of the program, we're going to hear from a doctor who is doing a lot of work in global health. But today we're going to talk with someone who is actually on the board of MAP International, which we're going to learn a little bit more about that here as we go along. But Dale Hansen-Burke is president of PDI. It's a marketing and communication strategy firm. And she's authored 10 books and a number of articles, speaks and writes on international development and women's issues. We've had the opportunity to talk with Dale in the past. She has served as editor of Today's Christian Women for a number of years, and has written several books in a series called the Skeptic's Guide series. And one of them was called Responding to HIV/AIDS, Tough Questions and Direct Answers. So we'll look forward to getting some answers to our questions. Dale, welcome back to Connecting Faith.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
You know, many of us maybe are. In fact, I was interested in the title of the book series, The Skeptic's Guide. So maybe just say more about that. What are we skeptical about as it surrounds HIV/AIDS?
Sure. I mean, I started the series because, like many people, I had questions about so many things in the world, and HIV/AIDS was one of them, where I felt like it was really hard to ask questions that might be just awkward or, you know, politically incorrect or, you know, that type of thing where you wanted to say, gee, I'm kind of confused about this, but I don't know who to ask. And so, you know, from a skeptic's point of view, it's really about, you know, saying, gee, I hear a lot of things out there, but I'm skeptical. I don't know who to believe. I just want the facts. Just give me the facts. Don't tell me how to believe or, you know, spin it for me. But you know, try to give me just the facts. And so I called it the Skeptic's Guide because, as personally, I'm sort of a skeptic. I just want to know what the facts are, and I want to know what to believe.
Well, you mentioned the word political correctness, and I guess I've thought about that, too, and maybe we can get into that. But I'm wondering, you know, has, you know, political correctness, which sort of seems to be the order of the day all across college campuses and maybe much of culture today, I mean, has that kept us maybe from dealing with this in a more straightforward manner, or maybe just not getting clear answers like we should have?
You know, I think part of it, I don't even know if it's political correctness at times. I think none of us wants to feel stupid. None of us wants to ask a question that everybody kind of goes, oh, well, everybody knows the answer to that one. So I think whether it's political correctness or it's just our own basic human desire to, you know, to not feel like we're asking an obvious question, that's sort of where I come down. I mean, I know that, like a lot of people, I just didn't want to, you know, ask questions that I thought, well, I guess everybody else knows this answer. I just must have been missing it. So, you know, I think it's a combination of those things.
Did you did this come out of a personal interest? I know you write on international development and women's issues. So is that kind of how this you became interested in learning more about HIV/AIDS?
Yeah, I mean, I was traveling to Africa in the late 90s, even in some of the in the late 80s, and I knew there was talk about this, but I just didn't know much about it. And when I'd come back to the U.S., people really didn't seem very interested. They talked about it very much at that point as being a disease of gay men. I mean, they really, you know, didn't think of it as being something that affected people beyond a group perhaps that they were not part of. So they really just didn't see it as something that was of concern. And the more I kind of went back and forth and I tried to get people in the U.S., especially in our churches, interested, I was surprised by how little people were interested. So, you know, that's – and then I met Kay Warren, and she, you know, was also similarly affected by realizing that she had not you know, should just had not been clued into this, and really felt that God was putting that on her heart. And so that's when Saddleback Church started having AIDS conferences and started educating people. And, you know, fortunately, they many churches just wanted some kind of a resource to use for their people, and that's when I wrote my book.
Yeah. Let's talk about some of the facts, maybe answers. What do we need to know about AIDS? As you said, I mean, many still think it's just this is something that's just focused in the homosexual community, but there's more to it.
Well, certainly, I mean, it's most prevalent in Africa, and anyone who has traveled to Africa or has been involved with ministries in Africa knows that this is just a devastating disease. It continues to affect entire populations. And so you find, you know, many children who are orphaned because their parents have both passed away of AIDS. So, you know, it is still a very key issue. It's a lot of the reason that we have to deal with issues of poverty and other diseases, because other diseases also prey on people whose health is affected by HIV. But the good news is that, you know, about half the people who need treatment for AIDS or for HIV are actually getting it now, which is just, you know, that's sort of the headline for me, is that after all these years, we finally sort of turned a corner, that at least half of the people that are desperate for help are getting it.
And you're part of a ministry, MAP International, which does just that, right? It provides the kind of treatments for a variety of issues, right, and supports medical missions around the globe.
Yeah, MAP is a wonderful organization that provides especially medicines for people who are working in hospitals around the world, especially mission hospitals, as well as provides medicines that people can take if they're going on a mission trip and want to go to a country where they really need some medicines. Antiretrovirals, which, you know, is what's used to treat AIDS or HIV, those are usually provided by the government. But a group like MAP provides all of those really important medicines that sort of surround that treatment. So, for example, I was doing a lot of work in Zambia, and the children would develop, especially children who are HIV positive, develop all kinds of other diseases. They get fungal infections and that type of thing. And so a group like MAP can provide antifungal medicines and can help treat many of the things that these children are dealing with on a daily basis.
Talking with Dale Hansen-Burke. Dale is a writer, and she served on boards of World Vision, World Vision International, International Justice Mission, Sojourners, Opportunity International, and she currently serves on the board of MAP International in the Center for Interfaith Action and Global Poverty. She's written a number of books and articles on areas of international development and women's issues, and the one that we're referencing is a short little book, but it's a helpful resource called Responding to HIV/AIDS, Tough Questions, Direct Answers. And we'll get some more answers from Dale in just a moment as we continue here on Connecting Faith. You're listening to Connecting Faith. Today is designated World AIDS Day, or AIDS Awareness Day, around the globe. And the reality, as we're learning from Dale Hansen-Burke, is that it is still a major concern, particularly in the continent of Africa. And Dale, maybe just to bring us up to speed, I know that it started to, I guess traces back to what, the 80s, but it has become, I guess, in many ways a pandemic in parts of the world, right?
It certainly is. I mean, the World Health Organization, you know, gives the statistics every year of how people in the entire world die, and it's still the fifth leading cause of death worldwide, and certainly the highest cause of death in the continent of Africa. So, you know, it's not insignificant. I mean, I think we sometimes get overwhelmed by all the other headlines, and we don't think that's, you know, it's not a big issue, but it still is a very big issue, especially for people in Africa.
You know, the church has maybe not been fast to respond to this. I mean, it's a crisis of, you know, 30 years and growing. So has that changed? And if so, how has that changed?
Yeah. I think that's a very good news story, because, you know, I think many of us who were in church circles kind of either just didn't understand it at first, or you know, weren't quite sure we understood why this happened. And, you know, and it felt a little bit like, well, people who are leading a certain lifestyle may contract this disease. And then I think we were all confronted with the fact that, you know, this is a disease that affects, disproportionately affects children, affects women, these are not people who are making choices that result in a disease. This is really a pandemic that grows, and many people are victims of it. And, you know, we really, as a church, needed to be compassionate. And I think that really turned around. And again, I mentioned Kay Warren as one of the people who led the charge on this, as well as World Vision and a number of other organizations that really just helped inform people. And I think as Christians, we really did, you know, sort of have that moment of saying, wow, I just didn't get it. And, you know, the Lord touched many of our hearts, and we began to respond.
So is there a way to respond without, moving to Africa or India or Asia?
Sure. I mean, there are many groups that still continue to do ministries, and, you know, MAP International, which, again, I'm on the board of, and I'm very proud of the work that they do, is still a great organization to support, as well as World Vision and Compassion and many others that are still, especially working with children who are HIV positive and living with AIDS.
Say more about how life changes for a mom or for a child with this diagnosis, in a poverty-stricken area of Africa.
Yeah, well, I mean, again, the good news is that you can receive treatment now. The treatment is available if you have to get tested first, which is often a bit of a hurdle. Some people are not living near places where they can get tested. But once they get tested and find out their status, they can receive medications, and for the most part, the medications are paid for through the government, so it's not a crippling amount of cost for them. But, you know, they do have to take it on a regular basis. And, I mean, one of the things that we find is in very poor countries where people are taking their medications, many of them are, you know, just malnourished. They don't have enough food, and you really can't take these medications on an empty stomach, or you just have a lot of upset, and it causes a lot of problem for you. So it's one of the things that we've learned is that when you are giving out HIV medications and giving people this life-changing drug, you have to give them food, too, because they can't take the stuff on an empty stomach. They still need to have, they can't have malnutrition while they're also taking medication. So, again, it's a problem that affects especially poor people, and we need to be aware of that.
You know, you've been writing on women's issues for a number of years, edited Today's Christian Woman for a long time. Is this the major women's issue of our time? We hear a lot about sex trafficking and those things, but where does this fall in terms of its significance?
Well, it certainly is a very significant issue. Again, more than, half the people infected in the world are women. And then, of course, we've done a lot to be able to help women get tested so that they don't pass it on to their children. But, that is a significant issue. And certainly you mentioned sex trafficking, which is, it certainly is a big issue. But again, sex trafficking, HIV/AIDS and sex trafficking are often tied together because women who are trafficked are often infected because there's no protection for them. They are simply used, unfortunately, and often contract HIV from the men who use them. So it all works together, and, it's just a very sad thing that women in the world are often the victims of many of these issues.
You mentioned it's the fifth leading cause of death globally, but is there sort of a point to the spear, if you will, in terms of the global spread of AIDS, is where the disease maybe is most deadly? Is it Africa? Is it India? Or are there certain pockets where it seems like it is still running unabated?
Well, it's still certainly the most prevalent in Africa, and South Africa is the country with the highest prevalence or the highest incidence of AIDS. But, it is sub-Saharan Africa. It's an area that's poor. It's an area where it's a little bit harder to get to clinics. It's a little bit harder to get treatment. And when people are getting treatment, and the good news is that they become less infectious. They actually bring down what they call their viral load, and so they are not going out and infecting other people, which is really very good news. And again, we're able to test moms who are pregnant if they're in an area where we can get to them and then give them medication so they don't pass it on to their babies. So, it's mostly in impoverished areas and mostly in Africa, but we still have cases in the U.S. We still have over a million cases in the U.S., and we still have about 10% of the people who get infected don't even know they are infected. So it's not entirely somebody else's problem, and we all need to be aware of that as well.
Has your life changed as a result of knowing more about HIV/AIDS, and maybe what would you recommend for us to increase our awareness and maybe turn that awareness into some action?
sure, absolutely. I mean, I certainly support organizations like MAP and others that, you know, really are on the front line of helping people who are impoverished and who cannot, you know, sometimes receive the medications that they need. Because I realize now what it would be like. I mean, I've met so many women who, you know, sit there with their children, and I think if I'd been born in a different part of the world, what if nobody was helping me? So, you know, I think it's really, again, important to realize that those of us who live in this country are so fortunate. If we had been born in another country, if our children, you know, were growing up without food, without medications, you know, how would we feel as parents? I mean, of course we want to help, and that certainly has changed my perspective on the world.
Yeah. You know, we often, I guess, focus, I mean, on a day like today of those infected, but there are many others affected by it, too. And you can talk about even just the AIDS orphans. I mean, orphans are the numbers are almost beyond imagination, but this is a real outcome, isn't it, of the AIDS epidemic?
Yeah. It certainly is, and again, you know, what happens is that people try to take them in, people try to care for them, but again, that there are already people who don't have much to begin with. So, you know, you take in, you know, your sister's children or a neighbor's children, and that just means that there's less food for everybody else. So this is a kind of dynamic that is really a, you know, a byproduct, if you will, of poverty and makes poverty even worse. So We have to be aware of this. Again, we think, you know, it's easy to think of ourselves in our situations and think, oh, poor me, I've got this problem or that. But imagine if we had to just try to care for children in our communities who had no parents. I mean, if we had to figure out, okay, how am I going to take in five extra children because we don't have anything to do. There's no place for them to go. This is what's happening. And thank goodness, people in Africa do this. They take in children that are in need. But again, those of us who have so much, it's really a time to think about what we can do to help others.
I know I've heard Kay and Rick Warren both talk about how the church is uniquely positioned to be the hands and feet of Jesus, particularly in this area, right? Because they're spread globally, there's a network, and there's the compassion of Christ that is driving. So the church is positioned in a great way to be ministering here effectively, aren't they?
Absolutely. And many, you know, you go to many villages, or you go to even, you know, small towns in Africa especially, and if there's nothing else, I mean, there may not be a post office, there may not be any other infrastructure, but there is a church, at least one church. And that's really something that I'm not sure I really understood before I spent time in Africa. But that is the center of not only spiritual life in the community, but often the social life in the community. And so that becomes a very, you know, trusted place for people to go for help. And it's also a trusted place for us because many of us who want to give and want to be sure our money is going to the right place can give through organizations who work with local churches and who know those pastors and who know that the money is going to go to the right places. So that, again, is something that as Christians we sort of have a unique opportunity here to really help encourage and to also help the local church implement the programs that they want to do.
And if we don't have something going on at our local church in our community, it's probably a good way to get started and just to be aware of the needs close to home as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I live near Washington, D.C., where we still have a fairly high rate of HIV infection. And, you know, I do try to support local testing days and that type of thing because, again, I've been tested because, you know, I thought it was really important when I was in Africa to sit with ladies and say, listen, I know you. It's important to be tested. I've been tested. I want you to be tested. I'm not one of those people who's at risk for any reason, but again, to be able to go through the testing process and say, you know what, it's easy, it doesn't hurt, you know, all they need to do is take a saliva test. It's a wonderful thing to be able to do with people and say, you know, I stand with you and I'll go with you or I'll be there for you when you need to be tested.
And the bottom line that we stand with, that's the message of the gospel at its heart, right?
Absolutely. And again, you know, for me, again, one of the things that I've had to sort of deconstruct, if you will, is to go through, I'm an American, I'm very fortunate, I'm not at risk. So in some ways, it's easy for us to go, well, it's not our problem. But it is our problem, and we're called to respond. And so how do I do that? How do I do that in a way that is not me preaching to somebody and telling them what to do, but saying, you know, I stand with you, and I'm able to put myself in your place and think, What if my husband had infected me? What if I was looking at my children and knowing that they weren't well and I didn't have any way to get help? What would I do then? And, you know, again, Jesus calls us all to say, how do we help the least of these? No matter what problems we may have, we are still so fortunate in when we compare ourselves to the rest of the world.
A call to stand with the least of these. Good words today from Dale Hansen-Burke, president of PDI. It's a marketing communication strategy firm. She's written a number of books and speaks and writes often on international development and women's issues, and has served as editor of Today's Christian Woman and a nationally syndicated columnist, and has written a wonderful resource called Responding to HIV/AIDS, Tough Questions, Direct Answers. Dale, thank you for raising the issue with us again today and just for your encouragement and for being a voice in this much-needed area.
Oh, I so appreciate you having me. Thanks so much.
26 past the hour. In the next half hour, we'll hear from a doctor who's with the Christian Medical and Dental Association, get his insight on World AIDS Day. First, though, we want to take a short break to talk about Angel Tree. This is a wonderful ministry outreach we're involved in. It's an opportunity for you to be involved today at myfaithradio.com and listen to this story about Lisa Brown and be encouraged with her message.
Can a mom be a mom in prison? Lisa Brown was found guilty of drug possession charges when her son was 5 and her daughter was 14. She had hit bottom and couldn't imagine any way to stay connected to her children until a group of inmates offered a ray of hope.
They invited me to go up to the chapel to sign up for Angel Tree. I had no idea what that program was, and I was just totally amazed that people cared enough to provide our children with a Christmas.
That was the first time Lisa had been in the prison chapel, and she signed her kids up for Angel Tree.
There was a space on the application where you could write a message to your children, and that message would be delivered to your children with the present.
Was it possible that strangers would deliver her message and Christmas presents to her son and daughter? A few weeks later, Lisa got her answer.
And my son gets on the phone and he says, "Mommy, how did you know what I wanted? Thank you, and I love you forever and ever and always." I just fell apart. That was my message that I had written, was I love you forever and ever and always. So when he said that back to me, I knew exactly what he was talking about.
Not long after, Lisa gave her life to Christ, faithfully attended Bible study, and promised God that when she got out, she would somehow get involved with Angel Tree. At the Duncanville, Texas Church of Christ, near the end of a 12-step recovery meeting, Lisa got her chance.
At the end of the meeting, one of the guys directing the class stood up and said, "Listen, guys, I need some help. We're going to do this Angel Tree program. This is kind of a last-minute deal." Well, of course, my hand shot straight up. "I'll do it." And he's like, "Let me explain what it is." And I'm like, I shook my head and I said, "You don't need to explain. I know exactly what it is."
God had used Angel Tree in a miraculous way in her life, and Lisa wanted to be part of the same miracle for others.
I looked up and I'm like, "Thank you, God. You answered my prayers." And I became the coordinator at our church and have been doing it.
I hope that you will respond to this opportunity. $73 will help reach 5 children with a Christmas gift, the gospel, and a message of love from their incarcerated parent. You can call this number, 855-59-ANGEL, to make your gift today. 855-59-ANGEL. More Connecting Faith in a moment. Well, we're at 32 past the hour, and it's Connecting Faith. Again, just want to thank you for your partnership with us in Angel Tree, the Angel Tree campaign. Just so you know, we're across our Faith Radio network. We'd love to see 1,200 children taken care of with a gift and the gospel and a message of love. And $73 takes care of 5. You know, $146 would reach 10 children so far. Since Angel Tree's just started here with us in the last week or so, we have 287 children have been reached. So thank you for those that have given already. And if you would be willing to join and do that, we'd be honored to have you partner with us in this very important cause. MyFaithRadio.com. You can give online as well, MyFaithRadio.com. And or you can call Angel Tree at 855-59-ANGEL. I want to continue our conversation today. This is the 1st of December, World AIDS Day, and to help us bring a medical viewpoint and perspective today, we've connected with Dr. Reginald Finger. He is on the faculty of Indiana Wesleyan University now, has lectured and researched for the National Embryo Donation Center, and he's also a member of the Christian Medical and Dental Association, received a degree in medicine from the University of Washington in Seattle. And we're honored to have him with us today, where he teaches at the Indiana Wesleyan in the areas of public health. And we're glad to have Dr. Finger with us. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very kindly. I appreciate being here.
Let's hear from your insight and outlook as World AIDS Day today. What is it from a medical standpoint? Why is it important?
World AIDS Day. We've had World AIDS Day each year, December the 1st, since 1988. It accomplishes a couple of things. One is awareness of HIV and AIDS. That, of course, was a big deal in the early days. It's still a big deal. One might ask, why is awareness important per se? Well, I think any disease spreads worst when you have ignorance and when you have superstition and when you have misconceptions going on. So accurate information about AIDS actually does help prevent transmission when people behave in a better way, when people protect themselves by avoiding risk behaviors, and when people reach out to people who are infected to help them get treatment and to help them get tested. All of those things are benefits of awareness. Further, World AIDS Day does something else too, and that is it engenders better compassion towards people that are infected. A lot of the emphases over the years has been to get people into testing and get people into treatment and just into compassionate care. And we, of course, as Christians, always believe in compassionate care, and especially to people who have had something happen like HIV infection.
Well, it is a debilitating, a fatal disease, right, if left untreated. Say a little bit about maybe what's changed in the fight over the past 30 years in terms of maybe treatment or even some statistics about it.
Quite a lot. In the beginning, in the 1980s, when I was in training and AIDS first came on the scene, HIV virus was discovered, the test was first developed, it was a death sentence. The progression from HIV infection to AIDS to death was pretty much the same. And then things began to happen. We got the first drugs in the late 80s, more drugs in the 90s and since. They could be used in combination. That lengthened people's life expectancy with HIV infection. And you could prevent transmission from mother to child most of the time with the appropriate dosages of drugs to the mother and to the infant at birth. And then just more became known about how to take care of the opportunistic infections and other illnesses. And gradually, AIDS has become a chronic disease. Just by way of statistics a little bit, the number of new infections a year in the United States is about 50,000 a year, and that has not changed for a while. The deaths are down to about 15,000 a year, and because there are more new infections than deaths, basically because the deaths have gone down, that means the overall numbers of people living with HIV have gradually crept up. 1.1 million is the estimate that the CDC has now. For comparison, heart disease still kills more than 600,000 Americans a year, and all types of cancer combined, almost 600,000. So it does not make the top 10 in cause of death anymore. Globally, the picture has lagged behind that for the United States. Basically, if you figure that the United States began to have good news about HIV in the 90s, it was about 10 years later with the development of the UN's global program and the widespread distribution of medications, protease inhibitors, and the other medications that are used for treating HIV, the antivirals. The better news began to extend to the other parts of the world, particularly sub-Saharan Africa, where the HIV epidemic is the worst. And gradually things have gotten better. Two-thirds of all women giving birth, women with HIV giving birth to infants in Africa now get the medication to prevent transmission to the infant. The percentage is about the same on the globe as a whole. And about 40% of people living with HIV globally now know their serostatus. That's more like mid-80s percents in the U.S. So there has been some better news. HIV is not the same disease as it was 30 years ago, but it's still with us, and a lot of people still need compassionate care.
You mentioned the word serostatus, I think you call it. Say more about that, and maybe that brings up the importance of testing. What does that look like?
Well, serostatus simply means whether you're HIV positive or you're HIV negative. There's all kinds of very quick tests nowadays, very good tests. We started out with one and a confirmatory test back in the 80s. Now there are a number of them taken in various ways. They're not hard to get. They're not hard to interpret. But somebody who is HIV positive and doesn't know it, one, they're not going to get the care they need. Two, they're in higher likelihood of transmitting the disease to someone else. And so people need to know when they're positive. They need to be able to plan. They need to be able to get the appropriate finances in order to take care of themselves and plan for a long life. Life expectancy with HIV now compares pretty favorably with the life expectancy for the rest of us. Never thought I would say that. But if you don't get tested, you won't find out you have the infection. You won't be diagnosed. You won't be treated. The stigma of a positive test compared to the care you can get when you're positive is no longer as much of a countervailing issue as it used to be. Everybody who has any concern and everybody who has any reason to think they may have had an exposure, sexual injection drug or any kind of other blood exposure of that kind, should be tested to find out if they have been infected with HIV.
Our guest the previous half hour, Dale Hansen Burke, was talking about, she's been tested but did it because as she goes to Africa, she wants to be able to sit down with the women there and say, I've been tested, even in conversations here in this country as well. Is that something that, whether there's any sort of risk or not, that we should just have it done as a way to be more compassionate and maybe create some conversation?
If that's the reason, if you're being tested so that you can say, well, I've been tested, you should be tested too, like as if one would say, take one for the team. I've taken some vaccines of that kind where if I take it, then the question no longer becomes, what did you do to put yourself at risk now? But if the rest of us take one for the team, especially if you're in a situation where you have the opportunity to talk to people at risk, then sometimes being able to say, yeah, I took it too. In some things, the same thing applies to some vaccines. If you take a vaccine and you know you probably aren't at risk, but you take it anyway, just so the question no longer becomes, what did you do? But let's all get the test so that we all can get the facts out in the open. And that way, the people who need it the worst don't have an excuse to refuse.
Hmm. You're talking about people at risk. I guess it always brings up the question that is this a disease that, I mean, I guess other than mothers transmitting it to their children, is this a disease like many of our other diseases in our nation that we contract by choices that we make?
You do contract it by choices that you make, although not exclusively so. There are some people who have been exposed due to, well, the thing that comes to mind, of course, is an accidental needle stick. But people have sexual relationships that they believe are safe, even monogamous on their half of the relationship, only to find out that they have been exposed due to the other person's behavior. So you can't always predict your risk, although to a large extent you can predict your risk. So, yes, it does matter what behaviors you engage in, but you can't always make a judgment of that kind. So what that does for us is two things. One is it removes the stigma from having HIV. People can have HIV, and you needn't make a judgment as to what they might have done. But on the other hand, does it matter that you control your risk behaviors and that you behave in a way that HIV, of course, not only disease that's like this, that there HIV is only one of many good outcomes that you can be expecting if you do things like confine sex to marriage and you avoid injecting drugs and the other things we've always talked about.
Is there a message that maybe is most effective in terms of avoiding? I guess maybe you just summarize that, but you know, we make wise choices, but I just maybe in terms of how the message has been communicated over the past 20, 30 years. Is there one aspect that seems to make more, gaining more traction than others?
Well, it depends, again, on the audience that you're giving the message to. To the general public, and especially to the listening audience of a faith-based radio program, one would certainly continue to emphasize the sanctity of the marriage relationship and the sanctity of sex. Those are important issues. Also, once again, don't fall prey to the temptation to inject drugs, whether legal or illegal. But if you watch the behaviors that you engage in and you commit yourself to healthy behaviors, which for us, that's marriage, and I understand that a lot of people have put a lot of other words in place of the M word, marriage, but we have some other reasons to believe in marriage as a faith-based community. But what I began to say is that committing oneself to these series of healthy behaviors will not only put you at less risk for HIV infection, but it will put you at less risk for a number of other infectious diseases and put you at less risk for a lot of other social and relational ills that we always want to try to prevent. It's not just a matter of avoiding HIV, but it's a matter of a healthier life as well as a healthier lifestyle. And all of those things fit together. It's not just one thing.
Our guest, Dr. Reginald Finger, who serves on the faculty at Indiana Wesleyan University, teaches epidemiology, biostatistics, research methods, and supervises practicum assignments for the Master of Public Health program there. He's been in public health and clinical and research for a number of years. And we're going to talk a little bit about the role of public health, in particular as he's training future medical missionaries and some of the work that they're doing, strategic role they play in combating diseases like HIV/AIDS. We'll get to that and more as we continue our conversation here on Connecting Faith. Our phone number, if you'd like to join the conversation, is 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. Past the hour, talking today with Dr. Reginald Finger, who serves as on the faculty at Indiana Wesleyan University. He's working in the Master of Public Health program, teaching there, as well as he has worked with public health issues around the globe. He's a member of the Christian Medical and Dental Association and has a particular interest in connecting Christian universities to Christian physicians and medical organizations. And we're talking today on World AIDS Day about their work. And I know one of the areas that you teach on and have done is the research. I'm just curious, I want to talk a little bit about how, you know, the importance of medical missionaries, their role in public health. But, you know, there's a lot of funding that gets channeled into various diseases and areas. And I'm wondering, you know, how AIDS research dollars compare maybe with other investments in funding and you know, if we are getting a return on investment, because as you said, there's been a lot of medications that have come out in the last few years and really made a difference in the number of deaths those affected with HIV/AIDS.
Well, there's no question that a lot of money gets spent by the United States government on HIV and AIDS. The total is said to be just right at $30 billion. In context, the total health budget of the United States is well over a trillion. So we're talking about something that's it doesn't quite compare to all the money that gets spent on taking care of sick people. But the money that is specifically designated for HIV/AIDS goes in about four major ways. One is global assistance, which is about 20% of the total. HIV care and services for people that are infected, a little over 50% of the total. And then research, maybe about 9%. And then prevention programs, just 3%. And much of those last two through the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC. That doesn't count, of course, all the medical care dollars that get spent on just caring for people that come through Medicare and Medicaid, and people get cared for regardless of what condition they have, and they might have HIV and AIDS. So there would be some other dollars that are not specifically categorically HIV/AIDS. Now, you asked the question about how much good it's doing. Well, clearly the trends, both globally and in the United States, have been in our favor. So I think most people would say that the dollars have resulted in some degree of positive movement. Now, I am not an expert on cost effectiveness in this area. I've worked some on cost effectiveness with vaccines in other areas, but I have not worked in this area. I would be very encouraged that the investments have been of positive outcome. When it comes to research specifically, I would make the point that now, in where we are with the HIV epidemic globally, that I think prevention research, the research that tells us what really works in terms of stopping new infections, what helps large numbers of people change their behavior, what helps people stay out of situations where they could transmit HIV, what helps people stay out of situations where they would become infected with HIV, probably is of higher priority than basic science research, in my opinion. Now, the basic science research that's been done has been important, don't get me wrong. The research that tells what the virus is, where it came from, what the cells are, leading to, of course, the medications that we now use to combat HIV. But we have the tools. I think the message has been pretty clear for at least the last 20 years. We have the tools to stop AIDS. We have the tools to prevent new infections. We have the tools to move this epidemic in a downward direction. And the World AIDS Day people are now saying, let's stop every new infection. Let's stop people from dying with HIV. And let's make sure that nobody fails to have the compassionate care they should have. Essentially, the threefold message of World AIDS Day now. And I definitely agree with all those things. It just seems that when it comes to research, one would want to make the first priority applied research.
It leads to, I guess, maybe just to say a word about the importance of public health. I know that in your work, you're helping to train future doctors and the medical professionals. Medical missionaries are playing a key role, perhaps, in stopping the spread of AIDS in sub-Saharan Africa, especially.
I work in the Master of Public Health program primarily, teach and supervise, as you said, practicum assignments and research projects for our students. And yes, we do have a number of our students, not always doctors, many who are not clinically credentialed but just want to go into public health, who are interested in service outside this country and in certain places where there's a lot of need on the face of it compared to the Western countries. So yes, we are training a lot of people who are headed for missions service. Missions is a very, very multifaceted endeavor. My teaching partner, Dr. Philip Renfro, here at Indiana Wesleyan, is a former African missionary himself, 16 years in missions, most of that in Kenya. He's very fond of saying that it has to be holistic, and he spells his holistic with a W, W-H-O-listic. And what he means by that is, just taking HIV for an example, treating those who are infected, testing, counseling, unpacking the myths and superstitions, and ministering spiritually wherever possible, and listening to people, listening to families, finding creating solutions to help families, helping the church not to do the wrong thing in medical settings, and helping medical people not to do the wrong thing from a spiritual perspective. Dr. Renfro and several of his immediate colleagues that I have met across missions have really, really worked at making public health in mission make sense. And that's a movement. Public health in missions is a movement nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Michael Soderling is perhaps the best-known name in that movement. But what does it mean to people who are interested and have a heart for mission? Just to remember that health is part of mission and mission is part of health. And oftentimes you can find opportunities. We're fond of saying, share the gospel always. When necessary, use words.
You mentioned several times the need for compassionate care, and we only have about three minutes left or so. But say a word about how, you know, believers can be the hands and feet of Jesus in this area.
Well, no matter what country you're in, it starts where you live. That where somebody needs compassion, you will share compassion. Compassion, of course, is two things. One is it's listening, presence, and empathy, which is what you do when you really can't do something specific. And the other half of compassion is when there's something specific to be done, do it. If you can provide medication, if you can open your wallet and give to an organization that is very trustworthy and is known to be able to have an impact in missions, especially in health missions, then you might do that. But compassion has both of those faces, the listening, empathy, and presence side, and the action side. Both of those are compassion.
We have an opportunity, it seems, as the church, even in the first century, was there helping those that were struggling with disease. Now there's opportunities yet today to show the love of Christ in maybe some places far away or even close to home.
Right, and you never know when that's going to happen. The refugee situation. Refugees can be at higher risk of HIV just because of sexual violence and women selling their bodies because they feel they have no other thing to do to get money, and many of those things, which obviously we haven't time to explore further. But compassion is doing the right thing on sometimes without warning. When a situation comes up and you can suddenly be compassionate to someone, to suddenly remember, as the Samaritan did, now's the time to respond. And if you're prepared by an attitude of compassion, then you're more likely to respond with acts of compassion when the unexpected opportunity hits. And it could be here or it could be anywhere on earth.
Good words today from Dr. Reginald Finger, who serves on the faculty of Indiana Wesleyan University, teaches in the areas of epidemiology, biostatistics, research methods, and supervises practicum assignments for the Masters of Public Health program. We've been talking today about World AIDS Day, and as Dr. Finger, the bottom line is that we need to get informed, and then, as you say, to look for ways that we can listen and be present and then do what needs to be done.
That is a good way to say it.
Yeah.
Thank you, Neil.
Yeah,
appreciate your opportunity to talk with you.
Dr. Reginald Finger is a member of the Christian Medical and Dental Association joining us today here on Connecting Faith. I also heard earlier this hour from Dale Hansen-Burke, and she has served on the board of World Vision and MAP International and writes regularly on issues of women's and issues and development. But focusing today on World AIDS Day, and again, just to reiterate, the opportunity to listen, to be present, to show empathy is part of being compassionate, and then do what you can do to make a difference. If you missed part of the show today or you'd like to hear it again or maybe pass it on to a friend, you can always find our interviews. We post them on our website, After the show's over, you go to myfaithradio.com and then click on the Connecting Faith show page. You can find this interview and all the other great interviews that are available. And all our live shows here at Faith Radio, you'll find great archives of audio that's all shareable. So check it out online at myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com.